You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Days Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today, as I move this glass, we are going to be talking about defense mechanism release. You know what a defense mechanism is?
It's karate.
It could be. Well, in a way, it is karate, right? It's an automatic response that we do based upon the stimulus, right? So if there's something that may hurt us, maybe it's going to hurt us. Our self-concept, maybe it's going to hurt how we think others are going to view us, and so we act a certain way, or we become defensive. And there's so many different ways you can become defensive.
To protect yourself. Okay.
What I find interesting, and we're going to talk a little bit about Freud in here, we're also going to be talking about systems theory today, but what I was thinking about in the kitchen before we came down here into the studio was that Freud talks about the id, the ego, and the superego. And he did it at a time where there weren't such things as computers. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the computer and go, well, what is the id, the ego, and superego in a computer? Mm-hmm. Right? So if you look at what the id is, it's like the basic drives. What does a computer have stored in it from the time you buy it? Like, it's blank, right? It has all that stuff, but it needs to sap energy. It needs to have a display on. It does certain things that it has to do, right? The operational system. It's there.
The programs.
Right? And then the programs come, which is like the super ego, right? The programs come, the patterns come that kind of tell the computer what to do. And the ego is that interface. It's the interface, the keyboard, and it is what new input, the data that's going into the programs, and then how does it feed back and react to that? That's the ego, the interaction. So if Freud had computers back then, he would have given that analogy. He would have been like the GUI, the graphic user interface. He would have had the what did you call it, the operating system and the programs, you know, and he could have made a nice analogy, I think.
And the antivirus is your defense.
Antivirus software. Stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't cross the mechanism of defense.
Yes.
It could be. But we have a number of things that we're going to talk about in terms of that. A couple of them. So today we're going to be doing a brief review of defense mechanisms. We're going to talk about the top 10. These were originally conceived, well, I'm sure lots of people talked about them, but Freud was very well known for this, and he did that as an interface of people being defensive for different reasons, and they all came back down to something that happened in childhood, probably. Freud's structural model of the psyche, which will give us a reason for some of these defense mechanisms. And then we want to talk about the systems theory and psychological framework to try to relate it into more everyday terms. And then finally, we want to talk about some case studies of defense mechanisms in action.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Does that sound good?
Good.
So let's see where we'll start here. Here's a couple. So here are a couple of the top ones. And when you originally sent me the story and you wrote down stuff on paper, these are some of the ones you sent me. So the number one that we're going to talk about is denial, which is rejecting uncomfortable realities. An example of that is a smoker refuses to admit that smoking can cause health problems despite warnings from doctors. So denial.
Yeah, and also can't say, I know that a lot of people in COVID smoked and not die.
That's
so
right.
I am okay.
It protected them.
It protected. So you're looking for what you want to believe.
You know that nearly 90% of those people who smoked were not killed by COVID?
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's good for you.
Exactly.
It's a bias, right? So these defense mechanisms are also based upon our biases. But our biases are also based upon what we want, how we want to live our life, what we want to convince ourselves of, so we're going to talk about this later, but so we're not stressed in our psyche.
Yeah, so it's try to your brain calm down and say everything is okay. It's just your cut down, and then you create this kind of the denial. So,
fake reality. Mm-hmm. We try to falsify reality to make ourselves less anxious.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We all do. Just you. No, you. No, me. All of us.
I deny it.
Number two, repression, which is burying distressing thoughts. Example, a person forgets an embarrassing childhood moment that was emotionally painful.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, somebody who was maybe abused as a child forgets, or they were injured in something, a dog bit them, and they put it out of their mind. They don't think about it, and now they're always fearful. They have a phobia. They don't know where the phobia came from.
Exactly. No, don't recognize where it comes from. And it's difficult. This person puts something in subconscious. Mm. They never can link. It has to working hard. To
like the six times I was abducted by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of them.
That is the plan.
What else do we have here? Let's go. Projection. Attributing feelings to others. Example, accusing your partner of cheating on you because you have felt tempted to cheat. Ooh, mm-hmm. that's a deep one, right? You feel tempted to cheat. Oh, this was another one, is that if you feel a certain way, you think other people feel the same way. So the problem is the more information we have about something, the more we think others share our belief, or at least they should, because we know this, they should all know this.
And this is typical when I see couples, relationship, the person say, oh, my wife or my husband is tracking me, so jealous. Maybe the same person, you know, is cheating person.
Yeah.
So the cheating person sometimes is jealous person because know what happened, you know?
So they're thinking that their spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend is following them and tracking them because they're thinking of cheating, or they are, and they're more wary of. They believe it could be possible.
And this is a really projection. There's sometimes projection, and the next one you can put is sometimes it's difficult to figure out because looks like similar.
Displacement, yes.
Yeah.
Redirecting emotions. So this is on an emotional level, more emotional. It's a distinct present emotion that is heightened. So after being scolded by your boss, you go home and yell at your dog.
Yeah. Mm,
and I don't even have a dog.
I see you.
But I still yell at it.
I see you in the backyard. And I say, what happened in your
what
office, baby? But that's if something happened in the, also the, you see, your manager, is you have a problem with your boss, you
right.
project to your employees. Because
yes.
is replaced, or what they call the word.
In that case, that was deep displacement. You displaced. You put elsewhere.
And also I see family, they have a aggressive relationship.
Yes.
So the father kicking the mama, and the mama is so aggressive with the child because she cannot attack the husband because it's strong, so attack the child.
So this happens at school, right? So a child who may have a very tough home life then becomes a bully to others in school to displace their anger, right? To move it on to someone else, so they feel better and they feel good about it because maybe they don't feel good about it, but it's a way to get the stress out.
Drain,
to unstress, to de-stress. What else do we have here? We have regression, reverting to earlier behaviors. Example, an adult throws a tantrum when they don't get their way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that, do I? I don't do that, do I? hey, just because you and the dog are having problems, don't take it out on me.
Come on, Bobby.
Sublimation, how about that? Let's talk about sublimation. Transforming impulses constructively. So it's actually, this is a constructive way of dealing with it. Example, channeling aggressive drives into playing sports like football or boxing. So if you are physically stressed, you know, there is a a song years ago called Shout, Shout. Like if you were upset, you'd go to therapy and you'd shout and yell and scream. Yeah. They'd give you a dummy pillow. To hit, uh-huh. pillow. And it's like, so some people thought that was getting anger out, and mm-hmm. others thought that was just training people to become more aggressive. So it depends on yeah. if it's redirected into a constructive avenue. If yeah. it's a sport where you're not injuring somebody, but you're just physically doing something that may exhaust you, get that energy out of you.
Yeah, I is a comedian, and also we're talking about different, you know, the house in United States versus Venezuela. So we have all concrete. So for me, it was a surprise the child opened the hole in the wall when he's angry, you know.
And right, right.
And he say, we never do that in Venezuela because you
just break your hand.
So also this yeah. habit we don't have yeah. because it's not make sense because, you know. So that is also one symbol about how you can...
We're just stronger in the United States.
Yeah, I know. You can. You have Superman, you have Superman. Aquaman, all these. We don't have. We have a political bad people. Destroy more fast.
Oh, my gosh. Superman. They don't have any arch enemies. They are the arch
yeah,
enemies.
Yeah, there you go.
Very good. Let's see what else we have here. Sublimation. Oh, we just said that one. Transferring constructively. Yeah. Rationalization. Justifying behaviors logically. Example, a student blames a failed exam on the teacher being unfair rather than their own lack of study. And in many cases, you can take a little truth and stretch it, right? So maybe the teacher isn't fair, but maybe you didn't study, but you blame it all on them. So it's you can take a little truth and stretch it,
yeah.
or you can just make up something.
It's like the statistic. You can make out the number to demonstrate something. Yeah. So rationalization is something.
Half of all people believe they're 50% of the population.
You see?
There you go. Make up anything. So that was that one. Let's go on to the next one here. The next one is reaction formation. Adopting opposite behaviors. Example, treating someone you strongly dislike with excessive kindness to hide your true feelings. Oh my gosh.
I know this, yeah.
You know that? Somebody that you really dislike at work and you just feel it's going to come out in the conversation, so you are just really nice to them because otherwise you may say the wrong thing. What do you know about this? Tell me what you're knowing about this. Is
no,
it me?
I know people maybe people don't like me, you yeah. know, and then I my techniques become my friends.
Yes, that's
but that is other level.
That's a little different.
Yeah,
that's a little
but different. The reaction, yes, you also know the situation is so sensitive.
Yeah,
and then you try to, it's like the crystal, you know, you go and do like that because you don't want to touching up.
Well, if you get pulled over by the police and you're really polite with them because you're really, you're scared. So this is maybe yeah. you're not angry with them, but you're scared. So you're really polite. So you're doing that to deal with this, to hopefully reduce the saliency of the situation mm-hmm. and hopefully not get a ticket.
Yeah.
Right. Or there's somebody that you are really afraid of because you think they're a bully. And so maybe you're angry with them because they're a bully, but you have to treat them really nicely because you want to make sure you stay on their good side.
Yeah.
Right?
This is a little manipulation.
Manipulation.
Yeah.
So that's opposite behaviors. What else do we have there? Introjection, internalizing external attributes, adopting the values and beliefs of a close friend as your own without critical assessment. So basically, it's you're taking on somebody else's beliefs mm-hmm. in order to reduce the differences between. It's like if you don't believe somebody and maybe their politics, you're like, mm-hmm. you know what? It's not worth that for my friendship. I'm just going to start taking on their beliefs and views. And you may do it as a way just not to have arguments, right? So you don't want to have the stress of an argument.
So this can be the one technique to keep going, maybe deny. So you don't want to have confrontation. So
right.
it's defense. So you don't want to have problem. You don't want to have stress.
Right.
So you use this technique to...
So when someone says, you need to support this candidate or you're not my friend, right?
Yeah.
Then you're just like, oh, yeah, I understand. Oh, they do so many wonderful things. And it's, you don't want to take this really maybe non-issue to you and make it the reason to not have a friendship because maybe you've known the person for 20 years.
That's the reason that in my past somebody fired me because I don't support it.
Well, that's different. That's completely different. And lastly, whoops.
Yeah, you don't have to go there. Yeah.
That's the one I need to do there. Identification with the aggressor, emulating threatening figures. For instance, a kidnap victim develops a psychological alliance with their captor, a phenomenon known as the Stockholm syndrome, or as Stockholm syndrome, where you start identifying with the captor. You start thinking about, well, why did they do this? Do they have a real reason? And then instead of being upset about it, you actually, you know, psychologically, you start thinking, oh, they're doing the right thing and I'm supporting them now.
And it's a really good mechanism for survival mechanism.
Yeah,
because I remember my friend, you know, that she was kidnapped in the car.
Right.
And it's two ladies leaving the gym and two guys jumping in the car.
Mm.
And they driving almost 4 or 5 hours all night. And then she tried to become friends with the guy, try to negotiate because it's I don't know why, but I need to live in this situation in a good way, you know? So it's some mechanism.
So these are survival mechanisms. So a lot of these things come down from our ability to want to survive. So I'm wondering if before we had all these socially complex relationships, if a lot of these types of mechanisms are innate to us because they're all survival mechanisms. And I think that's what we would say from evolutionary psychology. These things have gotten us to where we are today. Now we have a more complex world, so we use these same techniques in this more complex world in order to, quote, survive. But survive might not be life and death. It may be social embarrassment. It may be our ego and self-internalized pain, right? And rather than, oh, if I don't act this way, I'm not going to live. Mm-hmm. It's if I don't act this way, someone's going to give me thumbs down on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right?
But that is the line that we want to try to balance, you know, because so much defense, you cannot see the true what happened in your life.
You are absolutely correct. If you are defensive, you don't see yourself as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back, we're going to talk more about Freud, systems theory, more defense mechanisms, and how to reduce them to have better, clearer communications with those you would like to.
Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about defense mechanisms and how to kind of try to get rid of them, deplete them, reduce them, to try to have clearer, cleaner, more concise communication.
And balanced,
yeah. Because sometimes you need them. Sometimes it is a way to survive the environment. Let's talk about Freud for a moment here. And this is kind of a repeat of something else, but it gets us in the mood for us to understand a little bit more about defense mechanisms. So we're going to talk about the ego and the id in relation to the world around us. Is the ego is the part of us that is our conscious mind that navigates the environment, takes into consideration the instinctual drives and motivations of the id, that's that deep dark stuff that's inside ourself, and the superego, which is society's programs, cultural norms, that says you need to do things this way. It could be our beliefs and values as well. And the ego tries to navigate all that in the environment of which we live to give us the best solutions. Like, what do we do next? The id is that thing. It's hidden in the shadows. It's unreachable, unconscious. It's the non-rational component which seeks pleasure. It's the drives developed through evolution, and it's deeply repressed material. Where the superego is partly conscious, we can feed it, we can program it. It's absolute and inflexible, though, once we program it. It is our moral consciousness, which is the morality and ethics, which part of it is based upon society as well as the culture and our upbringing. It's our beliefs and values. It is the internalized parental authority that has been programmed in us. It's unconscious guilt. It's there. We can program it, but instantaneously, we're not really thinking in our subconscious. We're not thinking from our superego. And then lastly, the ego is our conscious external world sensing unit. This is how we're sensing the world. It's the GUI. It's our graphic user interface. It's its eyes, our ears, our nose, our brain, our prefrontal cortex, the logic. It attempts to resolve id and superego conflict. It is our defense mechanisms. It protects us. It protects our id and our superego as well as our ego. It's partly conscious. It is calculating, reasoning, and planning. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, but the reason for all that is that our defense mechanisms protect everything that is not only in our conscious mind, but all that stuff that's in our subconscious and in our id. We're trying to always make sense of it. Right, if things are out of balance, if things aren't making sense, we get this feeling of anxiety and stress, and we're trying to reduce that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'll talk about cognitive dissonance too, because that is part of this. Is it not? It is. So Freud said defense mechanisms protect the brain from stress and pain. Defense mechanisms protect the brain from stress and pain.
Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. When somebody is in stress, and you have these, I see cases when people maybe is in the loose in the jungle, and that you try to survive. Maybe you activate all these kind of mechanisms, you know. And the moment that you see the rescue guy coming,
right,
you shut down. So they right now know that this moment you need to be careful, because people can lose the conscious or start to cry really in the whole process, never
right
want to feel anything because it's protecting. You know?
So somebody survives for 20 days on their own on a raft in the ocean, and in the last hour when they see the helicopter, they feel relaxed and mm-hmm. their survival instincts go away because they're about to be saved.
Yeah.
And that's when their body shuts down. So
yeah.
Our defense mechanisms keep us most active, most awake, and most in the survival mode mm-hmm. when we have the most difficult and challenging times.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in reality, in most life, we don't have that strong need for that type of survival, but we're trying to navigate and survive the office environment or a relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
Your job, your family, your kids.
Society.
Yeah.
So we talked about the id, the ego, the superego. Again, the super unconscious, I call it. The id is way down there. It's our nature drives, right? Our drives due to survival.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have our superego, which is all those values and beliefs that have been programmed into us. We don't really think about them. They are there, though. There are all those thoughts that go into what we do behind the scenes. And then the ego is what's processing all the information in front of us. And it feels that cognitive dissonance when things don't match up. If what our actions are don't match up with our superego, we feel like there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
So the defense mechanisms are trying to minimize that by lying to ourselves or lying to others
mm-hmm.
in order to minimize the stress, the brain pain. If we talk about this in a way that we like to talk about it, which is systems in systems, it sometimes brings a little bit more down to earth to us, the ability to talk about it, right?
Our interpretation.
Let's go right into it, which is the systems theory and psychological framework, the four subsystems of human organization, the human as an organization. The spirit is the purpose, mental, operational, physical, methodological, and emotion, psychosocial. Those four things are like, if you just think about yourself, you've got a spirit, like this underlying spirit or purpose in your life, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Mental is the operational, it's how you're thinking. It's very similar to the ego in a way. And then physical is the way you carry out things. It is your body. And then the emotion is how you feel about stuff. And your defense mechanisms are trying to protect any and all of that, right? Yeah. So how I emotionally feel, maybe it's trying to protect me from physical hurt. It's trying to help protect me from something in my mind that I'm thinking right now. Or maybe my purpose will be hurt. What my spirit feels will be hurt. Mm-hmm. And if we talk about spirit again, and what that is, what we are as a human, as a soul, is the purpose-filled soul, which is the spirit, is our mission and vision. And really, part of the goal of life is to figure out what that is, right?
Mm-hmm. So why do we are here?
And it may just be to get along with other people. It may be to raise a family. It may be to be at peace with yourself. Learn how to be at peace with yourself. But that is the spirit end of things. It is like in a company, it's like the mission and vision of the company, what drives that organization. Mm-hmm. So part of that can be, if you think about it, the spirit that drives that you really, that's way far connected. That can be almost like the it in a way. Mm-hmm. And part of that can be like the superego in a way.
Yeah.
Now let's continue on with this. Then we have the spirit, which we just talked about. It is the guiding force which drives vision, mission, and overarching objectives. It helps provide direction and purpose. Next, we have the operational system, which is our mental system, our thoughts. It encompasses mental thought processes and internal communications. Helps individuals understand their position, role, expectations within society, their family. It helps aid in decision making and personal development. It's the thoughts, it's the mental gymnastics you do all day long trying to figure out stuff. So that's the mental. Then we have the physical self, the methodological subsystem, which is defined as the physiological processes and functions like sight and movement. It's our physical self. It supports basic life functions and physical interactions with the environment, constrained by our bodily capabilities, that we can't go beyond our bodily capabilities and what we can do physically. Because if we try to, we try to jump too high or too far, we could break a leg, right? So that's a limitation.
And also sometimes the people say, what is first? Is it your feelings or your thinking, you know? Mm-hmm. But you remember we have a show the other day about what is first, and sometimes the feeling is first the thinking.
We think we're making decisions, and yet science has shown that if you do put sensors all over the brain and you measure blood flow and oxygen levels in the brain, which means when does a thought occur and when it doesn't, because as you use brain power, you're pulling oxygen out of the blood. So there is a MRI that they do for the brain where they're looking at activity. Mm-hmm. And what it sees is they're looking for someone to make a decision. And when the person makes a decision, they look at the brain activity and find out that the beginning of that process actually happens almost about 6 seconds before they think they made the decision. So by the time you consciously are making the decision, your subconscious has probably already calculated what that decision is going to be and controlled what you think you're making a decision about, which makes us have to think that our subconscious, right? The subconscious, which in Freudian psychology is the superego, or what we think about our subconscious, is that we need to program it the way we want to react, because we're going to react in that way, and our conscious mind is going to think we made the decision.
Yeah. And the other part is right now start to searching is about your gut.
Your gut feeling.
Your gut feeling. So sometimes say now the emotion is not your heart, it's in your gut.
Your gut.
And then they start to searching a lot of psychology.
And there's over 500 bacteria, right, in the intestines.
Yeah.
And only half of them, they know what they are. The rest, they don't even know what they are. They're doing your thinking, by the way. Your gut bacteria is thinking for you.
And maybe that's if we make a decision by gut versus
by
your brain.
Hold on. Oh.
The guy said,
the chemistry.
You have to feel now the how you represent love is not the heart.
What do they say? The weight of the man's heart is through his stomach, right?
Yeah, the human, because he say that it's more feeling area, more the heart. So I don't know why I come from in the past to say the heart is love. It's coming from the gut.
Yeah. So, and this is what you get, an upset stomach, or you feel satiated, all that stuff. So if you want to make better decisions, get better gut bacteria.
Yeah, no, really.
There's something to be said about that, right?
Yeah.
It takes guts to make a good decision. How about that? It's a gutsy move.
Gutsy-moto, no. Gutsy.
Quasimoto, you're thinking about. That's the bell ringer.
It's my English.
Yeah. For whom the bell tolls. And then finally, we were talking about emotion before. Let's go back to that. Psychosocial subsystems, emotion, it includes emotional states and interpersonal relations. It drives behaviors and attitudes through interactions with others, influencing social bonds and emotional well-being. So the psychosocial, or the emotional system of the human being, is how we feel about stuff. A lot of it's driven by society, right? The psychosocial aspect, as well as just how we feel. So it's our internal gut. But a lot of our feeling is based upon what we think others will think about us. So that is something that you'll see in this defense mechanism. It's, yes, it can protect us and our own feelings, but it can also protect us from how we think others are going to feel about us.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, there's so much stuff out there socially that if you post something, you ever post something on Facebook and you go, oh, why did I post that? Now everyone's reading it. What are they going to think about it? And you go, delete, and you delete it. So I think that there's been this whole cycle up and down of what people post about.
Yeah.
And it used to be a lot more controversial. And I think there's a lot less controversial things being posted now, at least in the group of people that I am connected to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've gotten rid of all the people I disagree with, and I'm teasing. But that's another thing people do, right?
Mechanism?
That is. It's called unfriend. That's a defense mechanism. That's the number one defense mechanism, unfriend.
Okay. That's
true?
Good. You cannot
it's
be
not
stressful.
In there. Yeah. Again, Freud did not know about unfriending.
Because he don't have internet.
He didn't have internet. He was unfreuding, but not unfriending. What else do we have here? Let's keep going on this. Okay, so this is just a little bit of a, let's look at the Freud concepts and the systems concepts, throw them together real quick in a chart, that the id is the instinctual primitive part of the psyche that seeks immediate gratification of basic needs and desires, whereas the body, which is being related to id right now, is the physical aspect. So again, id is the psychological, the body is the physical, but they have certain similarities, survival of the psyche, survival of the body. They both are innate, and they both go back years and years and years from evolutionary development.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how those two kind of relate. The id is being the inborn stuff, and you can't dissect the body from the id in this way, is that a lot of our core decision-making is made upon the systems within our body, which are reacting to the environment. So if you look at the, you know, what is making our heart pump, there is, you know, the auto, what is it called? The autonomic system, where our heart rate, our breathing, and all this stuff's done automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So we have automatic functions that are going on in our body, just like how we feel about things, how we eat and how we taste, that those things, which are, sure, we see them as a psychological aspect. Like Freud would think, oh, if you feel hungry, this is coming from your mind, right? Oh, I feel hungry because I'm thinking about my stomach making this thing. But is that really coming from your body? So we can't separate
the gut.
The gut.
Again.
So we can't separate id from the body. So we're putting them together. Then ego versus the mind. They're very similar, the ego and the mind.
Okay.
That they are the conscious, rational part of the psyche that mediates between the desires of the id, or the demands of reality, and the moral restrictions of the superego. So it is the ego and the mind. It is the rational part. And then last, the superego acts as the moral center of the psyche, incorporating the values and norms of society, which guides behavior through morals and ethics, whereas our spirit, which has similar traits, encompasses deeper existential aspects like values, vision, and life's purpose, similar to the superego's role in guiding behavior according to higher ideals, but more oriented towards personal meaning and fulfillment. So there is a lot of crossover between these two, but this allows at least us to kind of have that body, spirit, mind, and emotions. Mm-hmm. And emotions not listed here because there was nothing really related that easily in id, superego, and the ego to emotions. Emotions in there, but there wasn't one that related really closely to it. But if you look at number four on this page, emotion represents feelings and affective states influencing and being influenced by the id, the ego, and superego. So emotions almost like the result of all those. Emotions can drive the id's desires, challenge the ego's rationality, and conflict with superego's moral standards, thus integrating with all three Freudian structures. So it is a nice added fourth dimension because we are an emotional entity, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. So we have to see it completely. So it's, you cannot separate a spirit, body, you know, and emotion and physical. So everything is integrated.
It's all integrated and the emotions integrated. And as we just talked about, a lot of the emotions come from the gut, and the gut is distinctly our body, and our body drives decisions that we think we're making. But are we, or is it our gut bacteria?
It was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about defense mechanisms and how to work through them in order to have better, clearer communications. Recognize your own defense mechanisms, understand how to navigate through that, and get to better, clearer communication. Mm-hmm. So let's go into number one scenario here. John is a man who recently lost his job and is struggling financially. Despite the increasing debts and financial advice warning of unsustainable spending, he continues to make expensive purchases and plans costly vacations. He insists that his financial situation is temporary and that he'll soon find a job that pays even more than his last, thereby justifying his current expenditures. So he's talking up a good game of, you know what, I'm going to get a better job anyway. I'm going to keep spending. I'm going to take care of it. No problem. That, well, one is I think people, and I don't know if this is worldwide, but I think people have a positive expectancy of
optimism. Yeah.
And there's healthy optimism, and then there's unhealthy optimism, which is somewhat called delusion. Right? So how does John's statement protect the id, ego, or superego? His denial or defense mechanism acts primarily as a protection for his ego. The ego, tasked with mediating between the id's basic desires and the realities recognized by the superego, it finds itself in a precarious situation when the harsh realities of financial instability threaten John's self-concept and emotional stability. So we got the emotions in there too. See that? Denial helps to minimize anxiety, reducing stress in the brain, and maintain a semblance of normalcy and self-esteem, preventing the distress that would accompany the full acknowledgement of his financial ruin. So there you go. Defense mechanism, reducing anxiety and stress.
And at the same time, can be, it depends how you, your action doing, you know, because you can be optimistic, but also you have to be logical in the case of the guy. Why you have to spend money if your real life right now is you don't have a job, you know? So be positive and you find better job, but be knowledgeable that you need to be careful right now because you're not half calm.
But I don't worry. Oh, it's not about me. I don't want to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. you're like, if yeah. I worry about it, then you know, I don't want to be stressed about it. But you want to be in reality, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about how that is in the systems theory. How does it protect the underlying subsystems? Well, it protects the mental operational subsystems. Same thing that we just spoke about. Operational subsystems. In systems theory, the operational subsystem relates to an individual's understanding of their role and expectations in society. So this is a little bit beyond ego. This is now a little bit of social psychology going on here. Acknowledging his financial plight would mean admitting failure in his role as a provider and competent adult, which conflicts with his self-perception and societal expectations. So here we're bringing into society into this as well. So by denying the problem in reality, it allows him to continue functioning without the paralyzing effect of reality. Preserving his mental operation and sustaining his interactions and plans that depend on stable self-image. So here, this is the positive of it.
Mm-hmm.
The positive is by having the defense mechanism, it allows the person to continue operating in a positive fashion to help them get to that next job. Whereas potentially, if they said, I'm a complete and total failure financially, and they start acting that way, and they're negative and they're pessimistic, it affects their work more, it affects their job search more.
And also you can be, it's like the relationship, you can be desperate. We have any job because you are desperate and you don't value yourself.
Yes.
So that is the balance that you say, yes, I am professional. I right now is a situation, a word situation, is no problem.
Right.
And then I move forward because I have tools to figure out versus I'm desperate. And I jump in any job there.
So defense mechanisms can be good.
Mm-hmm.
So we compartmentalize our pain in order to operate in a way that's sane.
Yeah.
I like that. Compartmentalize our pain in order to act sane.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, here's the next one. This one's called academic dishonesty. So
share
how do I move it here? Because I'm in the wrong one. Okay. That's why. So that's good. I didn't share the screen because I was on the mm-hmm. wrong page. It is called academic dishonesty. Alice, a university student, is facing immense pressure to maintain her scholarship, which requires a high GPA. Fearing the possibility of failing an important exam, she decides to cheat by using unauthorized notes. After the exam, she justifies her actions by telling herself that the exam was unfairly difficult. The professor doesn't teach effectively, and everyone else cheats. So it was necessary for her to level the playing field.
Or professor, it's like that.
All professors are tough and difficult.
Yeah.
So justifying the cheating. Because if you don't justify the cheating, I'm guessing there's some people who don't. They're just like, this is what I do. I cheat all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And others justify it because down deep, they feel that they shouldn't be cheating. And so this is that cognitive dissonance where she has to say all these things to make up this story in order for her to relieve the anxiety between her subconscious, which is telling her cheating's bad, and her active cheating. In order to reduce the anxiety, she has to tell herself all these lies,
mm-hmm.
and potentially, we talked about this too, is maybe there's a little bit of truth. Maybe the teacher is tough. Maybe others are cheating. Maybe she knows that's all wrong, but she tries to justify it because she has to get this GPA.
And it's also for protect her bad feeling, you know, so she don't want to feel bad doing
right.
that.
Right, and here, if we go into this, it's protecting the ego. By rationalizing her cheating, she's reducing the cognitive dissonance between her actions, cheating, driven by her id's immediate need to avoid failure and secure the rewards, the high GPA and scholarship, and her internalized moral standards, her superego's insistence on honesty and integrity. So here it is. It's a protective device to allow her to do something that's not savory,
mm-hmm.
unsavory,
yeah.
and try to make heads or tails of how to do it without feeling bad. We could go into how it protects the emotion system. So in the systems theory, it's protecting emotion, convincing herself that everyone else cheats. She aligns her behavior with perceived norms, at least she pretends, which reduces feelings of isolation or being an outlier. So she becomes part. There's a lot of society thing in here in the emotion part. So she can be feel more socially accepted by saying, everyone cheats, I'm cheating, I'm part of that. Mm-hmm. Rather than feeling isolated, I cheat and no one else does. She's saying, everyone cheats. Yeah. So she feels like it's just normal, right? Part of the normal thing. Oh, and last scenario. Here's the last scenario. Mm-hmm. Tom is a manager who feels insecure about his professional abilities and fears that he is not competent enough for his role. Despite his insecurities, he frequently accuses his team members of being unskilled and not committed enough to their work. Whenever project deadlines are not met, Tom blames the team for their alleged incompetence, rather than acknowledging his own shortcomings in leadership and organization. Sounds like, again, a defense mechanism because he is not sure of his own competency. Projection. This is called projection. So he's projecting his incompetency on his team members. Yeah. It serves to protect Tom's ego, which is responsible for managing the realities of his professional life, while balancing the demands of the id and the ideals of the superego. By projecting his own feelings of incompetence onto his team, Tom can shield himself from the painful admission of his inadequacies and the anxiety they would cause him, the stress and pain in his brain. It allows him to maintain a self-image of competence and authority essential for his role as a manager, and it deflects the internal conflict that would arise if he confronted his own fears of not being good enough. This is the example of systems theory here. He is also protecting psychosocial subsystem, the emotional subsystem of the system, where it encompasses the emotional social interactions that are critical to personal and professional relationships. In projecting his insecurities onto his team, he's able to navigate the workplace without having to address the root cause of his stress and anxiety directly. By blaming others for it, he avoids isolation and embarrassment that might come from being seen as inadequate. This maintains his status and relationship in the office at a superficial level. I'm going to jump out of that and go, this case, it allows him to continue working, continue to get along with others as he tries to put his problems on his team members, and allows him, it's protecting him. Yeah, it's good for him.
But not for the team.
It's not good for the team.
Yeah.
And it's only good for him in the short term, because by not addressing his shortcomings, he doesn't grow in that area where he could become stronger and then actually become more valuable in the long run.
And also become the team and start to live in the company, and you just keep the team is bad like him.
You keep the worst. So what do we do? So how do we do the next steps? How do we manage defense mechanisms? What do you think? Should we do it?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. How do we manage them? Number one, recognize, identify defense mechanisms. Educate yourself. Learn about the different type of defense mechanisms as kind of what we went over today. Understand the various forms such as denial, projection, and rationalization. It will help you identify when they are being used either by yourself or others. Reflect regularly, as well as seeking feedback from others. And read that book right there called Defense Release. Okay, I made that up. It doesn't exist. But maybe it will in the future. Who knows?
Maybe we wrote this book.
Maybe we wrote it in the future.
Uh-huh.
We're time travelers. We're time travelers.
Yes, 90 days old, maybe you see the soul. The soul
there we go. Number two, uncover and understand the underlying issues. So you want to know what those underlying issues are that are causing you to have defense mechanisms. Journaling, we talked about that before. Write down your thoughts and feelings can help you understand and trace the real issues that might be causing defensive behavior. Therapy, talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's talking just to your partner, your friends, or a therapist about your underlying concerns that may be causing you to have defense mechanisms. And then finally, mindfulness practice, like meditation, techniques like that, thinking about yourself, your feelings, and where they're coming from is a way to uncover where the defense mechanisms are coming from. And then lastly, how to navigate. Navigate them. Develop healthier communication strategies. Open communication with those people that you're concerned about, that maybe you were defensive with in the past. Foster an environment of where open, honest communication is encouraged. Emotional regulation technique. Learn and practice emotional regulation techniques. Read books on emotional intelligence. And finally, look at constructive conflict resolution. Develop skills in constructive conflict resolution. Understanding that conflicts are normal and handling them healthily can strengthen relationships rather than damaging them. Baby, I love our deep talk.
Yeah, me too. It's part of our time.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.